and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 566.
That's right. What are we talking about tonight?
I believe we're talking about Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, or whatever the hell it's called. This thing did start last year, right?
Yeah, I think so. The trade is, I think, out. I'm trying to get the... My thought is to get the hardcover with Dan Mora, Dan Mora's issue one cover variant that's out there. So checking that out. But yes, the trade should be out now. If not, coming out very, very soon. But yeah, this is over and done with at this point. I guess it's a good thing we decided not to cover it issue by issue, since significant Green Lantern stuff significant in quotes too, doesn't really happen until the end.
Yeah, that is true. There are a few things worth discussing from a characterization perspective, but for the most part, it's, especially since this, I guess this is pretty much like a almost like an Elseworld story anyway, so it doesn't really matter all that much.
Yeah, and you can tell it's an Elseworld story, but I got a synopsis written up, and let's dive into it. We have our writer, Brian Buccellato, artist, Christian Deuce, and Tom Derrick. We have colorist, Luis Guerrero, letterers, Richard Starkings, comic crafts, Jimmy Betancourt, and Tyler Smith. Superman is planning to propose to Lois at dinner on top of the Daily Planet, and he's running around trying to get things done in order to have that time off, as his friends back him up and are supportive. One issue arises as he does this, and this is the Legion of Doom breaking into the fortress, because Lex, surprise, has a plan, and for this plan he needs the Mother Box and Orion's sled. His plan is to send the JLA into the Phantom Zone, except Toyman gets greedy, grabs the Dream Stone, and sets off the alarm. Because they're trying to back their boy up, Green Lantern, Flash, Wonder Woman, Supergirl, and Hawkgirl arrive to deal with the Legion, but during a fight, the bomb hits the Mother Box, and the Legion disappears. The Legion, consisting of Lex, Captain Cold, Manta, Toyman, Giganta, Cheetah, and Gorilla Grodd, are on an unknown tropical location and start trying to find their bearings when suddenly a Skullcrawler appears, followed very quickly by King Kong. The Legion enters a nearby structure where they find data on the MonsterVerse monsters, except for Grodd, who's so enamored of the ape god Kong. Toyman, having learned all of this about the MonsterVerse and now wants the plan to change and gets no respect from the Legion, wishes he could bring the toys, the Titans, back with them to play with the League, except he's holding the Dreamstone, so that happens. Superman's dinner is therefore interrupted by Godzilla appearing in the Bay of Metropolis. Superman tries to talk Godzilla down first, and during the fight, Flash evacuates everyone. Shazam tries to help, but gets in the way and doesn't follow Superman's plan, and gets Superman seemingly killed. Meanwhile, the rest of the League deals with other Titans like Scylla in Central City, Kamazots, I believe, in Gotham, and that mammoth creature over in Themyscira. And apparently the entirety of Skull Island also came over to our world too, because Wonder Woman, on the way to Themyscira, drops Oliver off while she's heading over there with Cassie to deal with that mammoth. With the Legion back on our Earth, Lex is trying to pull as much data as he can about what's going on with the Titans. Flash is backed up in Central City by Hal and Kara, but Kara suddenly hears Superman's heart stop, so she zips on over to Metropolis. Billy Batson is stunned over Superman's death, and Atom Smasher tries to help, but he also dies. So Shazam and Kara rock the absolute shit out of Godzilla for a second, and Shazam tries to lead Godzilla away. Back in Central City, some of the Legion of Doom show up to help with the breakout in Central City, and Manta lets everybody know he's contacted Deathstroke to hunt down Toyman in the meantime. All the fights across the various locations with the Titans suddenly end as the Titans start heading away in roughly the same direction, mysteriously, except for in Gotham, where the Bat family has dealt with their Titan. Ollie's on Skull Island just surviving until Supergirl shows up. Kong tries to grab her out of curiosity, but gets bitch slapped by Supergirl for not asking for permission first. While in Gotham, the Bat family plus Cyborg and Dinah are trying to figure out what's happening, Shazam shows up to let them know he thinks Superman is dead. And meanwhile, somewhere in a random desert, Lex has followed a signal he found to find the eye of Mechagodzilla. Everyone's dealing with the aftermath of those first attacks. First responders, the League is clearing Atom Smasher's body. Shazam is tracking Godzilla. The League has taken Superman to the fortress for recovery in a solar array, but it's not working. Batman has a plan. He's noticed that signal Lex noticed, but now it's gone. And Cyborg informs him that all the other Titans are on the same path, but Godzilla is tracking towards the fortress. So knowing that Godzilla is tracking Superman, they move Superman somewhere Godzilla can't get him. The Watchtower. Supergirl and Kong continue their dick measuring contest with a stare down on Skull Island when Kara starts to recognize some intellect behind Kong's eyes and decides to fly off to check on her cousin, leaving Kong and Ollie to deal with the League of fucking Assassins who have been biding their time in the forest awaiting to attack. Kong and Ollie attack, and Ollie drops down to the League of Assassins shipping barge that they have offshore to find out what their goal is. Lois comes to the Watchtower to talk to Clark's unconscious body, saying she found his ring and her answer is yes. And while the League responds to a distress call from Aquaman, Lois reviews the footage from the fortress and contacts Mercy Graves to find out where the Dreamstone is, and Mercy gives her an info dump on Monarch, Godzilla being the king of monsters, and that he exists to preserve the natural order, which Supergirl also overhears. Meanwhile, Manta has more of the Legion standing by as Deathstroke and Cheetah get a lead on Toyman's last location in Metropolis before Godzilla's initial attack. And over at LexCorp, Lex is building a mech using his tech and that of what is in the eye that he found in the desert. Over in Atlantis, Hal Jordan, Flash, and Wonder Woman help the Atlanteans protect the city's dome while Godzilla faces down against Tiamat. No attempts to stop the fight or destruction help, so Arthur releases the Kraken. Tiamat also eventually swims off, like we saw the other Titans just kind of head off last time, and the Kraken takes Godzilla down into the depths where Arthur puts those chains on him that were on the Kraken. But in the fighting, the dome above Atlantis is breaking, and Hal is alone trying to keep tens of thousands of pounds of pressure from destroying it, but he passes out just in time for Guy, John, Jessica, and Simon to keep things held together. Back on that ship that Ollie found, he finds a massive skull, Walker's skull. He tries fighting the Legion, but he can't, and abandons ship and changes his plan to getting help. And over on Skull Island, Grodd has arrived with apes to worship Kong just as Supergirl comes back to look for Ollie. Grodd controls her mind to make Kong submit using a piece of kryptonite he's added to his little helm. Cyborg sends all the information on Monarch to Batman, who has people working overtime also building something. Cyborg and Batman reach out to Billy, but he's distraught and decides to take the Legion on alone to make them pay, but fails and is captured. Lex powers up his mech for some testing, and the LexCorp Mechagodzilla is now live. Meanwhile, then the mother of all ill-conceived ideas, Ra's al Ghul, drops the Skullcrawler's skull into a Lazarus pit. Everyone in the League is now reconvening to share all information with everybody else, and Lois, who has been sitting with Clark, suddenly realizes he's no longer there. The Legion also play their own version of catch-up with Lex, who's piloting the Mechagodzilla mech, and the Legion joins him in Metropolis with three Titans at his back, while Batman meets them with his own Batmech and the League at his back, plus all the Green Lanterns we've seen so far. The GLs form the Megazord, and the fight is on. Mind-controlled Supergirl joins the Legion's side with Kong and Godzilla, Kong and Grodd alongside her. Kong rips an arm off of the GL mech. This particular arm is piloted by Guy, and before he can get up, Grodd kills Guy Gardner. The League gets Kong and Supergirl back on their side, but the Super Skull Crawler shows up with a bunch of little Skull Crawlers to make things a whole lot worse. Then, in the final issue, Superman shows back up at the Watchtower to let Lois know he's okay and was teleported to orbit around the sun to recharge. And then Superman heads to free Shazam from the Legion headquarters and then heads off to free Godzilla from his chains, pisses him off, and gets him to follow him to Metropolis. The Legion finds the body of Toyman, but not the Dreamstone, the Legion of Doom. While the fight continues in Metropolis, no ground is really given until Kong is about to be killed by the Super Skull Crawler, and Guy Gardner's ring resizes to choose Kong, and Kong uses a construct of his axe to turn the tide. Supergirl, Wonder Woman, Cassie, and Shazam rip the arms off Mechagodzilla, and Godzilla and Superman show up to finish everything else off. Superman suddenly now has the Dreamstone and sends all MonsterVerse characters back home. And where was the Dreamstone? It was stuck under Godzilla's foot this entire time after stepping on Toyman in the first issue. And everything ends with Superman and Lois having a picnic in the park, which I assume is Centennial Park in Metropolis, which is odd considering everything looks just A-OK and there's no destruction from a giant Titan death match.
I'm really
How's
glad
that for a synopsis.
Yeah, I'm really glad we did not do this either in weekly installments or in two chunks at a time, because when I did the catch up on this, when I did the speed reading review of all these issues last night, is like, by the time you got to I barely was interested in the first issue. And to be fair, I read the jumbo one you had uploaded, so actually it was the first two issues technically in that one, but nonetheless, that's because it kept going on. But I wasn't part of it is because, again, we know it means nothing. It's not in continuity. They're killing off DC characters left and right. It doesn't really fit in with the monster continuity either, because of the fact that obviously if Kong's on Skull Island, this would take place before Godzilla versus Kong. But I guess it would be foreshadowing that he would happen to make an axe that looks just like the axe that he ended up getting in that movie. But it's a nice for what it's worth, it's kind of nice foreshadowing the Teal Mitt thing in with Godzilla.
Sure.
But other than that, it's kind of a hodgepodge. The only good thing is, yeah, they kind of give Kong his due, only from the perspective that they acknowledge that, you know, if there's anyone in the Titans that's a good guy, you know, based on Modok's records, it's Kong. So if there's anyone they could kind of like potentially reason with to bring over to their side, it would be Kong. And the Green Lantern ring on Kong was perfect. I think it was you and I when somebody, or it was Jim, or when somebody commented how it was strange that when they first kind of like put out the solicits, I think that showed that Kong was going to be getting a Green Lantern ring, that somebody zeroed in on saying, well, you would think, you know, Titans, it would be any Titans, it would be like more like a Sinestro Corps ring, Fear. And it's like, of course, again, like once you're in the story, you understand why there's really only one ring in town to begin with that could possibly go anywhere. But Kong is all about will. That's what makes perfect sense, that it would select Kong. You know, Kong's kind of like Rocky, so it's all about willpower. But Kong doesn't always win, or because he's absolutely the strongest, or I mean, Kong does have the advantage of being smarter than almost anything he's going to fight. True, but the reality is, Kong, it's his will not to keep going on. So that part was cool. The stuff with Hal was interesting, because I'm not quite sure how I feel about it. That
which stuff with Hal?
Just
the way, passing out? Or
no, I'm not. No, because I mean, that's weird too. But he'd been doing a lot of crap, and don't forget, he could probably be passing out, not just because he's of everything he's trying to what he's trying to hold together with the ring, But the fact that he's literally, I mean, you still have the outside pressure of you know, he's got his own little suit on protecting him from the outside pressure for him. And he's plus the additional strain of everything he's doing.
Yeah.
So that didn't bother. The characterization of Hal, how they really went out of their way to make Hal kind of a dick, which I guess is not necessarily uncharacteristic to make him overly abrasive and being borderline obnoxious. It did seem like they really kicked it up a notch, though, in all this. I mean, some of it, the banter was funny, like when he was talking about, I think when he was dealing a lot of, because most of the stuff is with him and Barry, just the idea that when he's saying, well, you know, it's like about how nobody really likes Barry either or whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, you are pretty unlikable. And he said, this is coming from like the most, however Barry says it, like the most unlikable, like a Justice League member. Or something, that it's just an interesting characterization, just because we're kind of not used to seeing that. And Cal and Hal is just kind of being kind of like being abrasive a little bit and kind of being really, really sarcastic all the time, which, again, I'm not sure if it's a 100% improper characteristic. It's just something that we don't see very often. And it did kind of stand out. But at least they tried to give Hal some characterization. So I guess that's something, too.
Yeah. And especially in something like this where, like, there's a lot. It's not just your main seven league members. We also have a bunch of others showing up and even kind of taking the spotlight, just for whether it's a couple panels or a page or two or whatever. There's a lot. So you're kind of boiled down to your, you know, core tenets of the character or whatever. And one of them is Hal's our womanizer, right? So like the little kind of sneak peek of the fight to come with Superman having to take on Titano in Metropolis and then taking Titano over to Stryker's Island. I thought that was really cool for a number of reasons, because one of the things I really like about the Justice League in some of my favorite Justice League stories is when the league just hangs out, as opposed to like always in high intense situations and life or death and all of that. Like the moments where they're friends and a team, like, and they may sound weird, but hey, they were the super friends for a reason, right? So like Superman just having a discussion with Flash on the way over to Stryker's Island, just about everything that's going on and him about to propose to Lois, and Superman is carrying, you know, Titano by these cables he's got wrapped around him and all of that, but Flash is just sitting on Titano's back. Like, imagine seeing that on live action screens. Like, I think that's just funny that this is just the kind of shit that happens in a real world with superheroes and supervillains and giant robotic monkeys and stuff like that. But I also like the same page, the scene where Barry says something snide and Hal's like, oh, stop it, you heard me coming. He's like, no, I'm not here to talk you out of trading in your independence for a life of being number two. I just want you to understand what you're giving up. And Superman's like, and what's that? And he's like, pretty much everything. And in the very next page, as they arrive on Stryker's, Wonder Woman's there to meet him. And her first thing out of her mouth is, I hope you're not listening to anything Hal has to say. I thought that was cool. Like,
yeah, I do think the banter between members, at least, is that's something. And they, I think that is probably the strength overall of this book. I mean, some of the art's good with the Titans, some of the art isn't. The stuff under the sea was kind of cool with the Kraken and all that stuff. I'm considering what they did in this book, I'm kind of surprised they didn't kill the Kraken.
Yeah, that's true.
I kind of figured that was going to be a foregone conclusion once it became a one-on-one battle between what, like, Godzilla and the Kraken. It's like, well, like, I mean, unfortunately, based on the balance of things, based on where we are, you know, because Godzilla's dumb as a friggin' stump as far as being able to reason. So the reality is that you figured, yeah, you know, Kraken's going to go. But luckily, Arthur was able to basically distract him enough and get the Kraken out of there while he was able to chain Godzilla, and that basically solved that problem.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting too, that the fact that Godzilla could track Superman, because, like, yeah, he ended up in Metropolis because of Toy Man's thing, and obviously Toy Man he wanted them to play with the League, so it makes sense they'd show up and the Titans would start showing up in places where League members are known to operate, like Gotham and Central City and Themyscira and all of that. So it was interesting that Godzilla faces down Superman, and I don't know if it's before or after they start fighting, but it's interesting that Godzilla can pick up on kind of on Superman's energy, I guess, because is Superman emitting an alpha signal?
Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely so. There definitely are some aspects of this book that are really weird, because it's essentially like an Elseworlds thing. It really means nothing. So it's kind of hard to really, it's really kind of hard to be overly invested in it.
Yeah. For what it is though, I thought it was cool. I thought there was a bit much in it in terms of the amount of characters and frankly, also the amount of Titans.
Yeah.
Yes, it was cool to see a bunch of different Titans fighting a bunch of different people and stuff like that, a bunch of different scenes. And it's not like you get tired of seeing Godzilla and Kong all the time or trying to find ways to bring them in situations where they're fighting different heroes or whatever. So I get the idea to just kind of throw freaking everything at the wall so you get a massive battle sequence at the end of it. But just in terms of giving, you know, some Titans some room to breathe and stuff like that. Plus, like, I know they don't plan, like they probably decide to do absolutely everything they can in the first time and just hope for, you know, a volume two or something like that. But let's face it, a lot of this stuff has been getting volume twos. Like when there's, you know, Green Lantern in Star Trek, or speaking of Godzilla and the Power Rangers, that is currently in its volume two or three. There's Batman and the TMNT, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's been volume two or three at this point. Like these crossovers like this get a lot of traction. And I get that the MonsterVerse in particular, as opposed to maybe just like, you know, Godzilla, the franchise in general. I wonder is there a difference franchising licensing wise between MonsterVerse versus Godzilla other stuff, or is it all the same thing? Because I don't know if the Godzilla stuff that's happening with Power Rangers right now is MonsterVerse Godzilla stuff.
I would assume it'd be different because I assume it would be different.
Yeah, because this feels like throwing all the Titans into it feels like a volume two kind of a thing. But bringing Godzilla and Kong into it for the first attempt seems like that's enough to really get people's attention and have some fun with the concept. And then if you get a volume two later on and, you know, it's a big success, then you start throwing more monsters at the wall to see what sticks and have a giant bat in Gotham City for the Bat family to take on. Like, but I don't know. And speaking of Jason Todd, a dick as always, I can't believe him. I mean, I can, but what an ass. He has a sniper rifle. Like, he's going to take a shot at a Titan from a rooftop and think that's going to do something? Are you freaking kidding me?
Hey, tell that to the Titan that's wearing an eye patch now.
That's true, I guess. I thought a lot of it was pretty cool. I do like the idea, like there's a cool kind of, it's not like so full splash, but like because of something like this, you get, and this happens on the same double page spread sequence, you get cool art effects like Godzilla unleashing his atomic breath and Superman unleashing his heat vision and the two beams colliding, or Shazam landing on top of Godzilla's head to say Shazam and the lightning striking Godzilla. Like there's all kinds of really cool shit. Like that image on that last, the last page of, was it the first or second issue when Superman is all tattered on the ground and Billy is trying to wake up Superman and Godzilla's roaring in the background. Like that's a freaking cool ass shot. It's definitely more threatening than Doomsday standing there in terms of just, you know, overwhelming odds.
Probably, yeah. They both kind of are one trick ponies and are mindless at times. So I guess there's an analogy, but Godzilla is bigger.
Yeah, I think too, it'd be cool to it's cool to see Adam Smasher take. I mean, he dies very quickly, but it's cool to see basically one of the giant size heroes just flip Godzilla on his back real quick. I thought that was cool to see. And, you know, this is, I know I said it, but like, come on, the combined might of Supergirl and Shazam together punching Godzilla at the same time, they rocked his absolute shit. He got up quickly, but like, that's a hard hit for anybody, let alone a Titan, to take. A Kryptonian and somebody whose strength levels, let's face it, pretty on par with a Kryptonian. So that's pretty intense.
Some of those sequences I really enjoy, but I think it did get bogged down with, I mean, Kong, to be honest, Kong really isn't in this very much. Kong, they don't really give Kong much to do, which is all right. I almost would have preferred that Kong wasn't in this. Maybe they should have just done Godzilla, the first one, and then maybe save Kong potentially to do a sequel. But you got the Godzilla storyline, and then which is first Metropolis, and then it's Atlantis. And then you have the Skull Island storyline, and you have intermingling. You have the Legion of Doom, and you have what they're doing, and you have all these different groups of heroes, and you're following different Titans. I don't know. We're not talking like Morrison here, but I don't necessarily think this was the easiest read at all times, too. At least from keeping my interest either. So it was.
No, I mean I gotcha. I also like, I mean, too many characters, too many Titans, and also like Lex finding Mechagodzilla's eye and then suddenly building a mech. Like, it's just as ridiculous as Batman building a Batmech. Like, of course, like even Lex, I'm not on the exact page at the moment, but like he says when he arrives in Centennial Park in Metropolis and Batman shows up with his Batmech, he basically says on panel, because of course Batman did. Oh, no. There it is. That's interesting. Of course, the Batman builds his own giant robot, which is the same thing we all thought when we saw it on the page. So you throw in like Lex, you know, merging his tech with everything from Monarch and all of that other stuff. And then Batman building a mech and like the Megazord Green Lantern robot and all of this stuff. There's just too much going on. But then, unlike some other comics, I can't necessarily fault it for that, because who knows if they're going to get the license to do this again. So they're just like, you know what? Let's just go all out. There's no reason we shouldn't go all balls to the wall, because there's no guarantee we can do this again. So nobody's picking this up for, you know, really intense emotional story beats. They're picking it up because, you know, superhero fight plus big monster fight equals cool.
You know, that's a good point too.
Yeah. What do you think? What do we think about? I mean, you talked about it a little bit, Kong getting the ring, because that was a big deal on social media for a bit. That image and a couple others were going around for a little bit.
Well, I thought that was pretty neat. That was probably you could probably make a strong case. That's like, that arguably is the only reason why Kong's even in the story. other than because of the whole Gorilla Grodd worship and things like that, that he worships him so much until he decides he needs to mind control him. But you can make a case that's just grodding, but the reality is, but I think the him getting the ring was probably the it probably was the highlight there.
Guy dying is like, of all of them, like I know, like preference wise in terms of favorite lanterns, I'd probably, you know, obviously I'd say let's do Simon or whatever, but I do like on a second read through, I thought it was interesting that like Guy, you know, it's John was like, hey, get back up here, we need you. And Guy was like, you know what? I'm going to fight these little monkeys first. And like, he wouldn't listen. Yeah. So John's calling, you know, after he gets pulled away from the mech, John calls Guy to get back up and get back up there. And Guy's like, you know, after I get some payback on these little monkeys, yes. He's not listening. He's not joining the fight. So he's kind of the architect of his own demise there. Instead of focusing on the bigger picture. So that was interesting. But I will say, because I messaged you when I saw this happen in one of the comics, and obviously I didn't tell you what it was about because you weren't reading it just yet. But what I was reaching out about, when I was like, I can't believe they just did this, is why in the world Ra's al Ghul decided to resurrect a Titan that he could not possibly have any control over. We never get any dialogue from Raish, but like the radio is like, the master's asking for an update. We're arriving in 40. The master says to proceed right at the drop. All preparations have been made. What preparations? He literally just resurrects the Super Skull Crawler, and he's not a part of the final fight, nor are the rest of the League of Assassins, as far as what I can tell. So did he just decide to add to the chaos, and we're kind of following along like the League of Assassins from the Dark Knight Return, or not? Sorry, the Dark Knight Rises, and maybe some of what how they were characterized in Arrow, where they're just like, you know what, it's time for the civilization to fall, so let's just destroy everything. Is that the spirit of Ra's al Ghul we're trying to pull here with this?
I don't think there's much thinking involved in this series. Generally speaking.
I know that, but I'm trying to put my mind in the mind of the character. And it's like, he says nothing. He's on one panel and we never see him again. We obviously see the League for a little bit here and there, but the League of Assassins here for a little bit throughout this series. But Ra's himself, never. What in the hell is Ra's thinking? And also the fact that there's a Lazarus pit that is basically just a volcano is crazy to me.
I don't know what to tell you, man.
would you recommend this to somebody if they saw the trade paperback or whatever on sale somewhere?
I don't think so.
No.
I think it depends, I suppose, on why you were actually reading the book. It didn't do anything for me. My first gut, kind of like, hey, do you think so-and-so is the Hall of Famer? Your instinct is usually, it's like, if you don't say yes automatically, it's usually that pretty much means no. If you have to think about it, it's no. So if I really have to think about whether I would recommend this, it's probably means no, I would not.
Gotcha. I know it's a little simpler, but on one side than it is on the other, but do you think this was better in MonsterVerse characterization or DC characters characterization?
Which is weird, because obviously it's not as easy a question as you would think, because of the fact that with the monsters, you don't get, it's not like you have any conversations or anything. There's no right. dialogue at all. I would say for the most part, if I had to answer that, I'm going to say it's better at DC characterization, at least as far as the Justice League goes. I don't know about anything. I didn't pay much attention to, honestly, what they were doing with the Legion of Doom and all this stuff. But for the Justice League, probably, even though I don't know, it's kind of getting old for me, making Batman so in love with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's much more of a modern contrivance, and I think it kind of gets old after a while. It's like, oh no, not Clark. I mean, you understand part of it, but maybe because we got bombarded with that during the whole Snyderverse shit. Maybe, but I know this, it makes sense, but it's just kind of like beating a dead horse, no pun intended.
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying, but I think too, like it was the status quo for a while, because we weren't always kind of Dark Knight Returns version of Batman, where we kind of had to view Superman as an alien threat that we needed to be prepared for. They were, and again, here's the word, super friends at one point, so.
No, I get what you're saying. It's just that to me, it just seems like this has kind of been the direction they've been going in for a while now. Whether it's that it's like he's the best of us, not him, and you know, it's like, and that's not the way. I mean, deep down, Batman may have felt that way, but this. A warm and fuzzy Batman under any circumstances is unrealistic. Maybe we can allow it with Alfred. Other than that, not like George Clooney, warm and fuzzy and Batman and Robin, because even with Alfred, that's bullshit. That because it's his whole Bruce Wayne was too warm and fuzzy. But yeah, so
yeah,
this was what it was. So
yeah, that's true. I think there's so much this could have been. You know, if we had less Titans and less characters, there were actually a couple of covers, variant covers, because there were so many variant covers, not just for issue one, but just throughout the series. And plus, don't forget, some regular ongoing series also had Godzilla or Kong themed variant covers to help announce that this was coming out, like a theme variant cover. Actually, one of the issues of Jeremy Adams' early Green Lantern one run was Godzilla and Green Lantern on the cover, which I obviously picked up. But I bring it up because a couple of the different variants had like Dr. Fate and stuff on there. And it just got me thinking, like, if we had less Titans and less just overall characters and could just kind of hyper focus on it, we could have played with concepts like, because the Dream Stone is used, what can magicians learn about helping everything out here in the DCU? Or because it's a multiverse thing, like, you know, anybody who can traverse the multiverse or Flash or something, like what could happen there? And then even just looking at the story itself, Kong gets a ring, and there are creatures within the DC universe who have gotten rings from the Green Lantern Corps who are not vocal creatures until they get the ring and have a way to communicate. For instance, Dexstar is not a Green Lantern, obviously, but he was, according to his origins, a regular Earth cat. And then once he gets the ring, he can talk. And then you have a bunch of other creatures, too. And of course, you have like alien Green Lanterns, and the ring can translate for them. So even if all they do is in their native language grunt, it'll translate it. So once Kong got a ring, it would be interesting if the Lanterns or somebody who could have a, you know, it would obviously be brief, but a conversation with Kong in a way to figure all this out. And there's deaf DC characters too. What if Kong signed before some of this, like, and Supergirl and Ollie weren't the ones who met him on Skull Island, but maybe one of the DC representations of deaf characters or whatever. Like, there's so many different things we could have done. And it's not fair to judge it for that, I don't think, but it's always not fair to judge a comic for what it could have been. At least in my eyes, but yeah, this I think would have benefited from being less, but I didn't hate it. It was also weird that it was 7 issues.
Yeah, because wasn't it originally supposed to be 6?
Or they made it sound like it was... I couldn't find a reference to it originally being 6, but I could have sworn it was 6.
I'm pretty sure I was, because I think they made a big deal over talking about the fact that it was basically being extended. So maybe there was one version of the story that could have ended where it could have ended in 6, and they realized because the book was selling that they might as well go for the bucks and stretch it out one more.
But I didn't hate it. I don't think it's a groundbreaking comic series, but again, I don't think it was ever intended to be. It's just, it's, you know, you're literally playing with your toys. It's like, you know, this is a fight you would have as a kid, with your action figures come to life. You got your Superman figure and your Godzilla figure. Let's throw them together and see who wins. But let's interpret it into a comic book page. So,
yep, that makes sense to me.
All right, moving on. What else we got?
Let's do Corwin's voicemail because we pushed it off long enough. It should have been last episode because we did Green Lantern, but we're gonna play Corwin's voicemail because it was an interesting point that he made, and one of the reasons why we pushed it off is because we wanted to. And I asked Corwin for like where do you think this actually took place? And he was very helpful, and he was accurate, because it was about the Green Lantern Corps and their relations to Durlans, based on the last memorable Durlan event we had during Venditti, that depending on how one interprets it, should have an impact on what's going on in this story, but clearly it doesn't. So let's play Corwin's voicemail, and then we're going to come back and discuss it in the context of the actual issue in which he's referring to.
Fellas, Corwin, listening to the latest episode, talking about Durlans, and it just kind of reminded me of something. Didn't, like, Von Daggle do something with his genes or something so the Green Lanterns can now, their rings can pick up Durlans or something like that? In the car, so I really can't research it right now, but I vaguely remember something to that extent. All right, keep doing what you're doing. Later.
So you have the magical issue in question, Chet?
I do. I have a digital archive of most every Green Lantern comic book appearance, including the one that Corin wants us to talk about. Did you want the issue number, or should I just read?
Yes. Let people know that which issue that Corin is talking about before we break down and give a ever so quick wrap up of what Corin was correct about, what he's referring to happened in that issue related to Durlans and the Green Lantern Corps.
Yes, the story with the Derlin War was called Uprising, and this was in the New 52 era of the Green Lantern Corps series, issue number 32.
Which volume? Three? Two?
There's disagreement on volumes, so it's hard to say. But this is the New 52 era, the issue clearly says Uprising on top of the page if you're looking for it on the cover.
Do you have the year?
No, I don't.
Let me see. Let me see if I will just see for the hell of it if Corwin gave me that information, because I think that he did.
So at one point during everything, Von Daggle shows up to Mogo at the command center to speak with Salik about how everything is going with the Derlin War. And he lets him know an update. And he also says that he tries to have the rings hone in on Derlin DNA, but it seems impossible. To which Von Daggle says his people have no true DNA and that it shifts every time they change their form. And Von Daggle then changes his form to knock out Salik. And he does this, and then he crawls into a kind of stasis chamber, whatever. And the system recognizes him. He overrides it, and he initiates an extraction sequence. To which he apologizes to Salik for. The extraction is complete. Daggle stumbles out of the stasis chamber, and Salik asks, what is this? And there's a status that says rings update initiated, and Salik asks what he's done. Every Derlin was infected with radiation. Through my ring, the system dug into my cells. It identified the isotope that resides in all Derlins. And then a group of Green Lanterns who are facing down a threat on another world, suddenly their rings update. Ring database updated, Lantern Daggle, Derlin detection enabled, and then Derlin detected. So, yes, there is an update in the rings that is specifically tuned to detect Derlins based on a radioactive isotope that, according to comic book pages, all Derlins have.
So, yes, in theory, that the Green Lantern Corps should be able to pick up. But then again, you could say if they're now actively seeking or searching, that the ring may not ping you automatically and tell you, hey, Derlin detected. You may have to be asked. You may have to ask the ring to do a scan to look for.
Which is correct. That is something that happens in the comic book. Obviously, I was being very, very brief about it there. For a second, but after the update goes out, Derlin detection enabled, the Green Lantern asks, wait, where is the closest Derlin? And then it says Derlin detected. So they have to ask in order to see.
But the point still is, you're dealing with Derlins, and you know your bad guy is a Derlin. There's no reason to think there wouldn't be other Derlins involved. The reality is, you would think you would kind of be doing that. Or maybe there's a way to auto. Maybe there's a way to, even if it's only temporary, basically turn almost like an auto detection. Turn on, have the ring, you know, do auto detection for Derlins. But
it's possible that like the information that was stored in the database is attached somewhat to the central power battery somehow, and the central power battery is technically no more, or it was somehow connected to the Book of O, and the Book of O is somewhere else, or. You know, like you said, you have to ask for it, or there's any number of reasons they couldn't use it. Plus the fact that technically in terms of story, and yes, we think it's a little crazy that nobody suspected any other Derlins of being involved. But in terms of actual story, Hal just figured out that it's not just Tharos. It's the entire council has been overrun by Derlins, and then lost the fight, and then immediately had to kind of leave, get rescued by Carol, and is now thrown into this absolute power thing. So it's still, obviously not for us as readers, but it's still quote-unquote relatively recent that we learned, that the characters learned that Derlins are a big factor at play here. So there's still time for this to come into play.
Yeah, there is. But this also could obviously be something else that was quote-unquote forgotten.
True.
Because I kind of forgot it until Corwin mentioned it. I kind of forgot it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, but then again, we're not getting paid to remember it either. the right stuff involving it. But all kidding aside, yeah, it could still go either way.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
I really don't know if we have anything.
Anywhere does Mark scene or anything?
What the hell did I see last week? I'm telling you, my brain's just focused on so many different things, none of which are good for my stress level. Twisters. I saw Twisters last week, which I must admit, I had absolutely no interest in seeing that movie. So because probably I was going in on that plateau, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. There was much more in it, and it was much more interesting story-wise than I thought. It kind of kept me enthralled. And even with some of the subplots they were doing about what was going on with this group and that group and what you didn't know and what I thought it worked. I thought the chemistry was good with Glenn Powell and I forget what her name is. Another Daisy, not Daisy Ridley, but she's another Daisy. That their chemistry was pretty good in that movie. So I would recommend Twisters, and obviously there should be plenty of seats available as we're recording this, because Deadpool and Wolverine are about to open, and that's where like 50% of the movie going audience will be seeing this weekend.
Yes. Because you mentioned current time. Yes, it is. As we record this, guys, this is July 24th, Wednesday. So this starting tomorrow with like preview night and stuff like that, San Diego Comic-Con is well underway. So if you hear this issue when it actually drops, yes, we know San Diego and there's probably news. Expect to hear something about that, you know, in an upcoming episode, most likely the very next episode we record, but you know, plans being what they are. Speaking of Twisters, I don't think I've ever seen Twister.
Neither have I.
It's on sale currently, I think, on Vudu. I don't know for how much, but I know it is. It's on sale, which they tend to do if there's like a movie that's coming out that's either related or a sequel to or something like that. They'll put out something to help kind of drive people to the theaters, especially now that Vudu is owned by Fandango. So it totally makes sense. So I've been considering like watching the trailer, the various trailers I saw show up, because I watch a lot of YouTube these days. Watching the trailers that would show up for Twisters, because I saw a couple of different ones, actually got me curious enough to add Twisters to my wish list, and kind of, I still haven't done it yet, but decide whether or not I want to pull the trigger on getting the first movie. I don't know that I'll follow through and go with my curiosity and go as far as seeing Twisters in theaters, but hey, it got me curious about the franchise, so, you know, why not? That's probably a win.
and by luck of the draw, it's number one on Max, which is funny because I don't know if I would have guessed that's the movie that finally has supplanted Godzilla X Kong as number one on Max, but it's the original Twister. So if you have Max, you can obviously, anybody out there can just watch Twister currently. I'm not sure if it's going to be there once we roll into August, probably, I would suspect, but currently in July, it's still there. So it's worth, and you'll be pleased to know, Chad, that on Newsarama that if you were interested, you could get everything you wanted to know about the ending of Deadpool and Wolverine explained right now, because in the movie hasn't even opened to the public yet. but I'm looking at all the articles. When does Deadpool and Wolverine take place in the Marvel timeline? No one doesn't retcon Loki season 2. Post-credit scene explained. All this stuff. It's like, come on, man.
You know, I mean, like I don't care
for me, because I'm not going to lie. I actually watched some of the scenes.
You seek this shit out.
I saw some of the scenes today. So I saw some of the stuff. Some of the spoiler stuff, but I don't remember honestly. This is shocking to me from the perspective that if this was tomorrow, if this was Thursday evening, like around 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, I could actually be considering the site. I could understand why there would be some articles already on there, but they're doing it the Wednesday before the movie opens. I think that's pushing it.
Honestly, I just think all of this stuff is pushing it these days. Like, look, I completely know I'm shoving my foot in my mouth here, because I have participated in like, oh my God, this news is crazy or whatever. So like, I understand the impulse to know everything and be like, oh my God, look at this set photo or blah, blah, blah. Like, but forget Deadpool versus Wolverine or Deadpool Wolverine. Let's do the new Superman film from James Gunn. Is there fucking anything we don't know about this film yet? And it's not even done filming. we've seen nearly every set photo, every costume design, and so many individual snippets of this thing taken from various sets or from buildings that are zoomed in on down on the ground, Superman landing and greeting some kids while the rest of the league walks. Like, holy shit, when is enough enough? I'm not about to go on like a massive rant here because I don't think there's anything to, like, I don't think I have to argue this point. Like, I understand the impulse because I participate in sometimes, especially with things like Green Lantern and stuff. But like, even as somebody who participates in it at times, I'm also self-aware enough to be like, is there a point to going to the, like, this is probably too much of an overreaction, but like, is there a point to even going to the theater anymore? Because holy shit, you know everything about these movies before they even hit the screen. Like, when is enough enough? Because like, it's not just like people who are sneaking photos outside of film locations or whatever, but also like news sites are trying to hunt everything down. And even the people who make the movies themselves are making teasers for trailers. You know, like the official trailer comes out in a week, but here's a teaser for the trailer. Like, how many advance looks at things are we supposed to get before it's too fucking much? It's become a little crazy. I think everybody can accept that at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think in a way, with the culture is going to make this hard to ever completely knock out currently. The one thing I will say, I kind of wasn't impressed that it took probably up until today for some of these scenes to come out about, like, you know, spoiling some of the cameos and you know, which different variants of this character, some of the variants of this character or that character you're going to see in the movie, that I'm kind of surprised that they were able to keep it this long. But I guess that makes sense because people now have seen the movie. That some people have seen the movie because you see all throughout YouTube and everything, all the people that actually have clout that get to see these preview showings before, unfortunately we do, that the reality is they all have their reviews, even if they're spoiler-free reviews. So, you know, people have seen it. So as long as people are seeing it early, you know, there's going to be people that are going to fucking record stuff that they shouldn't and things like that. And that's how you ended up saying, hey, this character, some of the things that I watched today have been rumored all along. You just didn't have any physical evidence to support it until today. but much like Endgame, like with the Mjolnir scene, that at least some of these things would be cool, even though you know they're coming, but the majority of people won't know they're coming. So it'll be kind of cool to see how a relatively packed theater, which I know last time I looked, we already have for the 8 o'clock show on Thursday night, that it'll be cool to see people react to it. So that's a plus.
Yeah, the movie experiences was because like those videos are popular on YouTube for a reason. When people sneak a camera into the theater and they're not pirating the film, but they're kind of recording just in case there are big moments where the entire crowd freaks out, and then they can share, you know, clip the thing down and share that on YouTube. And then several years back, like, let's use the last Spider-Man movie. What was the movie with all the other Spider-Men?
What's the title? No Way Home.
No Way Home. Yeah, I forget which home it was. Spider-Man No Way Home, like, you can look back, or you mentioned Endgame. You can look those up on YouTube and see videos with tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of views of people just going back and looking at audience reactions to specific big scenes from those movies. So, like, there's something to still be said for the theater experience. But in terms of the actual content, it's like, holy God, we almost know everything now before we ever see the movie in front of us in the theater. It's crazy.
Yeah, I do agree with that. But I am looking forward to this movie. I just hope it's as entertaining as I'd like it to be, because I don't care personally about Deadpool as a character. It's mostly Wolverine that interests me and what they're going to do with the, you know, with the timelines and the variants and what and all the remnants of the Foxverse and different things that we're going to see. Now, that's the stuff that really intrigues me, because I don't know if I have a lot of expectation that this is going to be some earth-changing event in the MCU and I don't mean even from a momentum perspective. I just mean that something happens in this movie that has a dramatic effect on And on the main MCU as we know it, I kind of don't think it's going to, but we will see.
All right. Anything else before we close out?
No, let's wrap this sucker up.
Okay. Well, before we do, I just want to
liar.
I just wanted to let everybody know, because I haven't mentioned it in a couple of months, but now we're getting closer to quote unquote the deadline. If anybody has any interest in joining a Lantern Cast fantasy football league, let us know. And Mark's about to tell you guys how to let us know, but the various ways to contact us. But we're trying to make it as easy as possible so that newbies can join this. Nobody's going to, at least for now, like in terms of the first year or two of this thing, no one's going to put in money. There's not a pot for it. We're going to try and make the draft and everything easy as possible. I'm not trying to ask for a ton of commitment from anybody, but if you've ever wanted to be a part of a fantasy football league and give it a try, reach out and let us know. And for those of you who are familiar with it, it's probably going to be ESPN Fantasy app. It's going to be Snake Draft most likely. And not an auction league and not a keeper league, just to make it easy entry for any newbies that want to join as much as possible. All I ask, and I would assume all Mark asks too, because I think we'd be on the same page about this, is if we're going to get and do this thing, let's be involved in this thing. So all we ask is that you participate in the draft and just make sure that the players you draft and your lineup is active from week to week, because it's no fun to match up with somebody and have everybody in your roster completely active and then half of their bench is not active or injured or whatever, and they're not even playing that week. So all we ask is that you pay attention, basically.
Now, I wouldn't complain if somebody I was playing had an inactive roster. I mean, well, a win is a win, Chad. In fact, you can make a strong case. Fantasy football is the bet because it's almost always. I mean, yes, theoretically, you can still have like a rotisserie scoring system in football, but almost nobody does that. Yeah. It's usually just out and out. It's head to head victories or some variation related to fantasy points anyway. But you can make a case that that's the one sport where at least if you're consistently inactive, at least your record is going to reflect you being inactive.
That's true.
Because sometimes you can dodge a bullet and I've seen it happen. It doesn't happen that often in baseball, but it can happen in which you can kind of coast and have a miraculously surprisingly good performance for someone who's not paying a damn lick of attention.
That's true. And just to be completely fair, you guys, I think at the minimum we'd want a total of 8 people or so, right? Just to give it some, you know, back and forth. Obviously an even number or something. Mark and I myself would obviously already be a part of it, and I tweeted today about it, and 2 other people are interested. So at this point, all we need is at least 4 more people. Although I think it would be more fun maybe if we had a total of 10 or 12 people. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. I just honestly want to do it this year. Mostly because I want to see if I can beat the shit out of Mark. but honestly, there's no pot or anything. It's just bragging rights at the end of the season. So if you'd like to join, let us know. And then if you'd like to reach out to us about anything else, Mark, what do they do?
Chad's home address is LanternCast@gmail.com. That's the best way to get in touch with us. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GeoCast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN. That's the number to use, and let us know what you think.
All right. Next Mark and I episode, we'll definitely be talking about some GL news if anything comes out of SDCC. But because a movie like Deadpool and Wolverine coming out, there may be a Deadpool Wolverine episode out between now and then. Don't tie us into anything, but the next episode or two could be one or two different things. So just keep enjoying listening, and we will talk about any Green Lantern news that comes out of SDCC soon. So
good night, everybody.
Good night.